Welcome to Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news, trends, and hottest topics that focus on advances in cybersecurity and cyber industry economics. Our expert yet down-to-earth hosts make cybersecurity straightforward. They ask the tough questions and make this challenging topic something that everyone can understand. Our candid approach lets guests open up on topics we would all like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at newcyberfrontier.com. That's www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join today's host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
Welcome to today's episode of New Cyber Frontier. On today, we have a couple of gentlemen from Devil Dog Security, Isaac James and Dr. Steve Beatty. Isaac is, they're both former Marines. So here, and that's something with the name in Devil Dog, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's the Marine Corps mascot.
Yep, definitely. So, and Dr. Beatty was Metro State Denver Computer Science Chair. Still is, right? Active,
right.
Current. All right. So we, before the show, we were talking about these two gentlemen and Devil Dog are deep into the cybersecurity maturity model, maturity model certification, CMMC. And I've been talking all day, so my tongue is starting to get twisted as my mouth gets dry, right? But welcome today, guys. And I wanted to give both of you a chance, one at a time, to give a little bit about your background and how you got to the point where you are and what your key focuses are in this industry. Go ahead, Isaac, we'll start with you.
All right, thanks, Chris. Basically, my background is, I've got a business development background in marketing and in sales. But over the years, I've been able to start many different ventures. This is my fifth venture that we've gotten involved in. And bottom line is, I was working on my master's for cybersecurity, and I saw the opportunity. And so I put a team together about 15 different people. Most of who have a military background and PhDs to basically spearhead a company that specifically did work for the Department of Defense, which is the CMMC certification.
Okay.
Yeah.
Dr. Beatty.
Yeah. So been in and out of DOD sorts of things through the years, worked for a number of 3- and 4-letter agencies. Most recently, I led the cybersecurity team at the National Center for Atmospheric Research in Boulder. And so that was an awesome time. It's a FFRDC, a federally funded research and development center. We implemented FISMA, which is all the NIST 853 controls, if you will. Mm-hmm. And then since that time, I've been at MSU Denver and then working with Isaac. And with my background, then I think it's a good match then for what's going on with the CMMC and the DOD.
Yeah, so CMMC, one of you give us, background on it. I think we've talked about it several times on the show, but no, we haven't focused a whole show on it. This is kind of new. So tell us about the history and how we got to this now being the key thing.
Sure. Maybe I'll take the lead on that and Isaac can chime in when he needs to. Many people in the software industry might have heard of the CMMI, which is what came out of Carnegie Mellon on software. The Air Force sponsored that. And essentially, it is how well integrated then is software development into a corporation. The Department of Defense has become very concerned over the last couple of years that they will say on the order of $600 billion of intellectual property has been stolen from primes and subcontractors. And they become very, very concerned about that. It's pretty easy to look around the world and see the weapon systems that we have developed and used by people who are essentially just copying it. And so up to this point, if you will, and I would say end of last year, beginning of this year, then there wasn't a requirement for cybersecurity like there is going to become now. It's not that it's been ignored, but there has been essentially a certain amount of wiggle room. So up to this point, the NIST, which is the National Institute of Standards and Technology, 171A is what it's called, or the R1, the Rev1 version of this, has been used for companies, contractors with the DoD to do a self-assessment. And then they do what's called a self-attestation. They get what's called an ATO, which is an authority to operate, and everybody's happy approximately. But there's not as much rigor to all of that as the DoD would like. And so what they've done is then create a new model based upon the 171, but it's more than the 171. And there is no more self-attestation. You have to be audited. You have to be audited by an external assessor, and that person will say yes or no, or that organization will say yes or no. You are allowed to contract or subcontract. One additional thing that's different is it's now everybody. Up to this point, if you weren't handling what we call CUI, controlled unclassified information, you didn't have to do anything at all. And so now every single DoD contractor, whether they have CUI or not, has to pass at least level one, as what it's going to, is what it's called in the CMMC. So it's required for all DoD contractors, and that's new.
All right. Well, let's take a break here from our sponsors. We'll be right back. I wanted to talk about that progression and some of the trends in the older ones. Be right back.
Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
Hey, welcome back to New Cyber Frontier. On today, talking to Isaac and Steve from Devil Dog Cybersecurity and about the CMMI or CMMC. And the upcoming new requirement for capability maturity model for certification companies have to gain in cybersecurity. And you had mentioned their predecessors, the DISA, the risk management framework, and then the NIST 171, and then the cyber kill chain, and then all these before, the NIST 853. And I remember, you know, back in 2015 or so, NIST 171 had to be implemented by every government contractor by the end of the year. And then it was, okay, we'll grandfather you by the end of 2016. Oh, wait a minute, we're just kidding, by the end of 2017. Oh, yeah, you know, nobody's really got there yet, so we have to do it by 18. You're getting my picture here.
Big time.
Yeah, not only do we have the scope creep, timeline creep, the compliance creep, but you also have every couple years, we seem to have a whole new organization. Now we have the CISA that just came out from the DHS, the CMMC. Last year it was RMF was a new thing. You know, the inundation here.
Yeah.
I guess I would just throw it out and say, really? Is it happening this time?
Yeah, it's pretty overwhelming, and it's also hard to keep track of. I have every reason to believe it's going to happen this time. And so there is a woman in underneath the Undersecretary of the Navy, essentially leading this. Her name is Katie Arrington. She comes from business. And I have every belief that she's going to make this happen. And so it's also the case that this has been kind of a hurry up thing. But there is a lot of evidence that essentially then that RFIs mid-year and RFPs end of the year are going to essentially require this certification for people to receive the awards on them. I would recommend anybody who's interested to go to, here's some more alphabet soup, the cmmcab.org. And so there has been what's called an accreditation board form, and they post about once a month a video on the discussion on where things are. And April's video was Ms. Arrington basically saying, we're on task. We are not going to let this slip. We have a COVID-19 issue, but we don't care. This is going to continue to move forward. And by the end of the year, the expectation is something along the lines of 1,000 companies will have to have been accredited in order to be able to get contracts. The approximation, and this is a bit of a guess, is that there are 350,000 contracting companies in the United States for the DoD. Mm-hmm. The DoD is the largest company on the planet. They manufacture absolutely nothing and essentially contract it all out. And so they have the very largest budget. And so it's our general recommendation that people start paying attention to this, because they have hit all of their marks so far. Mm-hmm. Started slightly over a year ago, January, and they haven't missed a mark. And so all of this stuff that they've promised has come true.
So, okay. So let's take the approach that, wow, we might need to get behind this. Now, where do we start? Give us the process of walking through this, that a company that somebody listening is saying, I need to do something about this, but all I have ever heard is the acronym, where do I start?
Right. So at the moment, you start with 171. So NIST 171, R1, is the first set of controls. Much of CMMC is based upon that. That's about 80% of the controls. And so they're now called practices. They're no longer called controls.
Explain a control and what, you know, my company needs to do for one of those things.
So let's
talk about CUI first, though, Steve.
I'm sorry?
Let's talk about CUI first.
Yeah, so
what level they're at. That's the...
Right. So if your company only has what we call federal contracting information, they need to be what's called level one. That's 17 controls. And essentially, that's the usual basic cyber hygiene. If they have CUI and controlled unclassified information, they have to be at level three. Level two is no reason to be level two. Level three then has what we call 130 practices and five policies. Mm-hmm. So 117 of those came from the NIST 171 controls. And if you look, let's just take the first one, which is access control. And so you have to have strong passwords, right? You have to have a certain complexity of passwords. And so that's going to be, it used to be control, now it's a practice. And it has to also be written up as policy.
So that's the first one. So my company has to have 17 controls. The first one is I have to make sure I have some way to enforce strong passwords.
Right. And so, no, there's 17 domains. Access control is one of them.
Okay.
Now there are 130 practices, what we used to call control.
So if I said under access control, how many individual things do I have to do under that?
I think the count is 8, but don't quote me on that.
It's not like thousands. That's what I'm just getting at.
No, it's not 1,000. The total for all 17 domains is 130. Mm-hmm. So it's divided up between all the 17. Some of them have a few, some of them have more, just as would be typical. But so, for example, password aging, password length, what happens when you guess wrong three times and all of these other sorts of things. Those are the typical sorts of things that we'd be talking about when we're talking about access control practices.
Mm-hmm. So most companies would have a Microsoft platform or some control platform that would already do these. What percentage of, you know, I already do this just as normal business practices, already meet the control structure that is laid out?
So I would suggest that level one, everybody's already doing this. If they're not, they shouldn't be. I mean, they shouldn't be in business. There's 17 practices at level one. However, I would also say that it's much more sophisticated than just doing it. You have to have documented it. And if you're doing level three, you also have to prove that it's resourced with people, with money, with tools. And you say, oh, we require sophisticated passwords. They have to be of length 15 or longer. You have to be able to prove that. You have to have an auditor come in and say, prove to me that you have long passwords. And so that might look like an active domain rule, or you have to also say, all right, after three attempts, you're locked out. Well, walk up to a machine and guess wrong three times. Am I locked out? It's not that I'm saying I'm doing it. It's proving to an auditor that I am actually doing it. And so I would suggest that's a rather large difference. It's the difference between self-assessment and an external auditor. Uh-huh. And I think many of us can appreciate that difference when we're talking about banks and taxes and all those other sorts of things.
Yeah. So now,
it's not just the implementation, right. It's the documentation.
Right.
support the what you've implemented.
Okay. Absolutely.
All right. So, and you know, we're going to take a break and hear from our sponsors. We're going to come back and talk about that auditor thing. And so many of us are used to this. We pay a CPA. We get an attorney if we go to court, right? It's that third party that comes in and does something that for some reason we are either not capable or not allowed to by law for compliance to do. It has to be a neutral party. But we'll be right back after we hear from our sponsors. Welcome back to New Cyber Frontier. On today with Isaac and Steve from Devil Dog Cybersecurity, talking about the new CMMC coming out. And before the break, you brought up the concept that now the change between past versions of these are required compliances to now the new version of this is a required CMMC certification is this audit structure. Mm-hmm. So let's explore that. That means somebody's going to come into my company like my CPA, and go through all my books and verify, like my CPA does, that my taxes are done right, that my balance sheet's right, and sign off on it as a trust or a neutral party. This neutral party is going to sign off that my cybersecurity meets certain standards.
That's exactly right. And there are, as of today, none of those people. And so the training is currently being developed. And I will also say another major difference from, you know, the historical DoD is that these audits happen every 3 years. It's not a once and done sort of thing. It's not a one and done. Mm-hmm. It is if you're at levels 1 through 3, it's every 3 years. And if you're level 4 and 5, it's every single year you will have an auditor come in. And you're absolutely right. It's like the CPA looking at your Sarbanes-Oxley sorts of things, right? Looking at all of the different laws that you must abide by. And this is another regulation that essentially you now must abide by and have an independent auditor, as you say, attest to that or assert that.
So this is now must abide by. This is only if you want to do government contracting for the DOD.
So, and yeah, that's a great question. It's DOD contracting. So DHS has a different approach. DOE has a different approach. There's a number of different organizations inside of the United States government that take different approaches to this. And so it's just DOD. However, of course, the DOD is the 800-pound elephant in the room. They are by far the largest. And there's already talk of the other DHS and DOE and those sorts of things coming in. There's also talk of this going international.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So if I said this auditor person, whatever, they're developing training, what is the timeline for auditors to be out there ready to pull in and hire?
Yeah, so the timeline is end of 2020. Is that the stated goal is that there will have been 1,000 audits by the end of year.
Okay. And right now there's no auditors that are authorized or none that are. Is there a list somewhere that will be able to say, go to this site and here's the list of auditors, go ahead and get one?
Or can yes, we? That list is being formed. That's a great question. And so there are these third party auditing organizations, mm-hmm. Certification. They're called C3POWs just because we have to make Star Wars jokes, apparently. But so there will be a list. People are already signing up. Corporations are already signing up to do that. There are a lot of, you know, the typical sorts of places. If you look now, and nobody knows who these are going to be. But if you look and see, well, who's doing PCI? Right? That's a similar sort of, you have to pass an audit every so often and those sorts of things. So there are companies out there who are expert at doing, I don't know if it's similar, but related sort of work, HIPAA, you know, PCI, all of these other sorts of things. There are a number of firms out there already doing those audits.
Yeah. Sarbanes-Oxley is the biggest one. I know that, you know, every public traded company has to go through those and they have to verify that the company that's doing the auditing is not holding any interest in that company they're auditing. So they can't own any, none of the employees can own stock in the company that they're auditing. Are they going to that extreme with the CMMC?
I don't think there's any doubt that that's exactly the way they want to go. And so we need to make sure there's no collusion, right? And they're very serious about making sure that, you know, you when you are assessed every 3 years, that it's clean. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think that's exactly the direction they're planning on going. It is another government regulation, just like Sarbanes-Oxley. And so they wanted to, that's going to be the model. Katie Arrington came from business, and so is very familiar with things like PCI and Sarbanes-Oxley. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so is Devil Dog going to be one of these auditors? What's your path for the company? Yeah. You're looking at making that transition?
So we're actually looking at the other side, which is essentially helping people prepare for the audits. Mm-hmm. And so we've had lots of conversations around, you know, what makes the most amount of sense for us with the expertise that we have. And so at this point, and I'll let, you know, Isaac speak to this too, is that we believe our best value add is to, you know, have people come to us to help us prepare for the first and the second and the 10th audit that they will be going under.
Okay. What kind of a timeline? You know, if somebody comes to you, wow, we got to start looking at this. Give us that timeline of getting to this. You're certified level one, maybe two, and then three. And you, I heard you say one and three, but, you know, I don't know what the two is in the intermediate there.
So I'll answer it. Two is kind of a stepping stone to three. That essentially is, if you're a one and you want to get to the three, if it's, you're going to hold some information that you need to have. Two, the expectation at the moment is that nobody really will end up at a two. It's only a stepping stone. Ones are for people who are just doing any kind of contracting. We've talked, as it turns out, with people cutting the lawn, people doing a seamstress we've spoken with who is doing contracts for the Air Force Academy. And so if you have any of that kind of information, you need to, if you're doing any sort of federal work, then you need to have level one. And level three comes in pretty quickly too, is if you have a blueprint to a federal building, you have to be level three because that's controlled unclassified information. And if you have any information about, you know, former military folks, and those sorts of things, clearances, all of that takes you to level three. Mm-hmm. Ballpark, if you have already done a 171 self-attestation, right, you're probably looking at 4 months for a level three.
Depending on what size, thinking about what size of a company.
Of course, yeah. So we've been looking at the smaller ones, if you will. The Lockheed Martin's the big five, right? The L3 Harris's, they're already in place. They're going to be fours and five, little four and five anyways. So we're looking at the small to mid-sized businesses, of which there are the most out there. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's on a case-by-case basis. So a level one is just documentation. And so hopefully you've got all those practices in play already. Level three is a lot of work. And so it depends on how much work they have done, any company has done up to this point. Again, and I'll let Isaac speak to this because he's more expert than I, but I'd say, Isaac, would you say 4 to 6 months, depending on how much they've already done?
Yeah, I would say it's for example, let's say it's a level one. We can easily get someone done within a month for a level one because there's only 17 different controls, right? But when we get into a level three, and let's say someone hasn't done anything, right? That could range between 3 to 6 months. It's all about the complexity of what we have to implement, you know? And all the solutions are custom. So it's not that one size fits all.
Yeah. You know? So what would be the process? What would be that process? Somebody like Devil Dog comes in. What are they going to do? Does that company need to be prepared to help you guys start?
So what we do is we give everyone a free vulnerability assessment or a pre-audit. Okay. So with our prospective clients, we will come in, we will do what we call a vulnerability assessment, and we will assess what level they need to be at, how much CUI do they have. And once we assess that, then we look at...
That's a question I want to explore. How much CUI they have? So as part of this process, they go in and look through their data. thumb through everything. What is that? Is that kind of the starting process?
It's not thumbing through their data. It's about recognizing if they have controlled unclassified information. And if they do, we automatically will take them to a level three.
So if how they would they be able to say, let me look myself and do this first part, self-assessment, do I have this? What, give them some recommendations.
Sure, we would do that in the initial, we'd have an initial consultation over the phone, okay? And or at their location, and we would assess if they have CUI between us and them.
So how would they self-assess this, though, to start with, if they're listening?
In general, it's the National Archives, believe it or not, who says what CUI is and isn't. And so they could go to the NARA site and look up the CUI. There's a whole bunch of different types. They typically, for our people, for the folks that we're working with, they'd be looking at the Department of Defense. Mm-hmm. There's 30 or so different categories. Mm-hmm. And so in general, and this is has been a bit uneven in the past, that what the information that they receive is supposed to be marked as CUI. And so the marking, as many people might be aware, has been a bit uneven. And some of the contracting officers have some difficulty appropriately as to figuring out whether they are handing off CUI or not. And so there are some regulations out there, some DFARS regulations, what we call the 7012, specifies certain types of information that's CUI. The hope is, there's two hopes. One is that they, if they have it, they know it already. And it is also the case that CUI is being tightened up. There was a directive essentially released in March specifying some more tight controls. And so for the RFIs, RFPs that are coming out in the future, CUI will be marked, and as will the level, the CMMC level required for that contract.
Could you have it and not know it? It was never.
Yeah, that's very sad. And that could be the case, that you could currently have CUI. The DOD has said they are going to grandfather people in. So if you have a 5-year contract and you're 3 years into it and you happen to have CUI, they are not going to require that you go to CMMC. But to rebid, you will have to be at CMC level 3.
Gotcha. Is this type of information something that if you're on a contract creating something for the government, what you create could be that information?
Absolutely. Right. And so I think a lot of the initial concern is subcontractors building parts for airplanes and weapon systems and these sorts of things. And so what's going to have to happen into the near future is that the primes, Lockheed's, Raytheon's, L3 Harris's are going to have to pass through the level that the information that they're sending to their subcontractors is. Mm-hmm. And so that's going to be part of the process in the future too.
So it sounds like overall there's a process of identifying what type of data people have, what they've been handling, whether the government even knows that it's this classification or whatnot. And that's where somebody like you comes in, where you can really help with this questioning of it. So tell our listeners how they could get a hold of you if they wanted to engage your services and what types of things you do.
Well, you could go to our website, which is devildogcyber.com. There's a form there that you just fill out with your contact information. I'm happy if they want to call me directly.
No phone numbers.
Okay, that's fine. But just go to our website. You can just basically go right there and register with us, and we'll reach out to you.
Yeah, and if you have an email or something, I don't know if you have an info email at your...
Yeah, we can go info@devildogcyber.com.
Okay.
And those are two great places to reach us.
All right, and so if you're curious about it, know you have to go there, or just don't know if you have this type of data, and you want an expert to come in, Devil Dog, that's what you founded this company about. So you heard it here, and anything else you want to get out to our listeners?
It's free, by the way, for us to do an assessment.
Okay.
That's important.
All right, anything else in closing?
No, Chris, really appreciate your time.
Sure. Well, thanks for joining today, guys, and glad to have you here on the front range of Colorado and taking charge of this new, emerging, confusing area.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sure. You guys have a good day.
Bye. You too.
Thank you for listening to New Cyber Frontier. Remember to follow or like our post and circulate each new show to your networks. We keep you informed, bring you the latest news, explore new trends, and find the hottest topics. With New Cyber Frontier, you don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert. Just get plugged in. We encourage you to get involved. Tell us what topics interest you and join our mailing lists. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. That's newcyberfrontier.com. Check out our previous interviews and please let us know if there are any topics that you would like to hear discussed. See you next time on New Cyber Frontier.